This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture with me, Juliet Jacobs, Sumitra Selvaraj and Lim Soo Ann. Now we go on to our second story.
So in our second story, we're talking about this newest fad from Silicon Valley, a dopamine fast. So what exactly is it? So here's a glimpse into a day in the life of a dopamine faster. So 24-year-old James Sinca is one of them. And when he starts his fast, he cuts himself off from as many external stimuli as possible, right? So he'll stop eating, he'll just drink water to stay hydrated, he'll ignore his phone, his laptop screen, all his tech devices, he'll even try avoid interacting with people as much as possible, and this includes making eye contact.
Sorry.
No, I totally understand. It made no sense to me when I saw this article. But he's actually one of a growing number of people that are following this new trend of dopamine fasting, right? And it's just another fad to emerge from this future-facing region known for embracing all the sorts of wellness initiatives that we've spoken about before on the show as well.
Yeah. I'm sorry. He'll stop eating, only water, ignore his phone. Isn't that just meditation?
Doesn't sound as snappy as dopamine fasting.
Mm. Okay. So just to be fair, since we know we're all about being democratic today, so let's talk about the practice, right? So the practice is obviously caught on in enough of a high-profile community that, you know, the various media platforms have published articles about this because it is news if famous people in Silicon Valley do it, right? And as the name suggests, a dopamine fast essentially apparently means depriving yourself of the neurotransmitter dopamine for a particular period of time. And it recommends that you abstain for a short period, as short as even 1 hour a day, which, by the way, is maybe how long people meditate, from whichever specific behavior that has become problematic for you, whether it's gaming, scrolling through social media, or anything else.
Right. So before we get more into that, right, we need to first understand how dopamine works. So it's often been called the pleasure chemical, but, you know, what does this actually mean? Is this accurate? So here's clinical psychologist Dr. Chua Suk Ning explaining this.
So dopamine is a chemical in our brain, and we have a number of other different neurotransmitters in our brain. Dopamine happens to be the one that's associated with reward and motivation. So whenever we engage in something that is fun or pleasurable and satisfying, like maybe a really good meal or even a nice conversation with your friend, our brain releases dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helps us to connect the activity with something that is pleasurable and leads us eventually to then seek out what brings us pleasure. Now, this is very adaptive, so that, you know, if you like food and, of course, basic needs, yeah, including even sex and good food and social interactions, it actually directs your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
In today's world, we probably are doing a lot of other things that aren't necessary for survival, but also bring us, uses that same brain circuit, and so that we end up seeking and doing things that bring us pleasure as well.
Mm-hmm. But is it actually, in this case, right, the idea of dopamine fasting, is it actually possible to naturally control the dopamine that you that your body releases?
Oh, no, not at all. you can't. I mean, obviously, you can do certain things that give you more pleasure, but it's not that predictable what it is. And well, I assume that you could hypothetically and theoretically deprive yourself of absolutely everything that gets you pleasure, but, you know, you might, I don't want to get too meta here, then end up taking pleasure and not having any pleasure, and then you're going to be stuck in the loop. So I think it's quite impossible to actually do that, to consciously control and determine that your brain is not going to release any dopamine.
So the idea behind dopamine fasting is that we may be getting too much of a good thing in today's attention economy, which sees human attention as a scarce commodity. So this creates a need to carve out time without stimulation from things that can become addictive. So, of course, things like our smartphones, TV, the internet, gaming, or even shopping, because these common stimulants are generally seen as pleasurable activities. And so by deliberately avoiding them, supposedly we can decrease the amount of dopamine in our brain.
Mm.
So when we then then re-engage with these stimulants after the fast, we enjoy them more and our lives feel better and we can regain control over how we spend our time.
So Dr. Cameron Sipper, who is a clinical professor of psychiatry at UC San Francisco in the US, popularized dopamine fasting back in August when he published a guide to the practice on LinkedIn, a guide to how to start. He wrote that taking a break from behaviors that trigger strong amounts of dopamine release, especially in a repeated fashion, allows our brains to recover and restore itself. He suggested that without such breaks, we become habituated and numb to the high levels of the chemical. This in turn fuels the need to seek out even higher doses of stimulation to achieve the same pleasurable effect. Okay, maybe he's got something going there. Okay.
Yeah, and he has gotten a number of his clients to adopt dopamine fasting, many of them Silicon Valley executives. He says that dopamine fasting is based on cognitive behavioral therapy, which is an evidence-based treatment approach that helps people change unhelpful ways of thinking that influence their behavior. So it's most commonly used to treat things like mental health conditions and addiction.
Yeah, so Sepa says that he's used that and refined it into what he calls dopamine fasting. And so it's based on that. And this is as a way that he uses to optimize the health and performance of his clients, the CEOs, the venture capitalists that he works with. And he finds, and he says that his patients report improvements in mood, ability to focus, productivity, after including these short-term abstentions, which gives them more free time and more productive time to do other healthy behaviors. So I also asked Dr. Chua Sung Ning what she thought about this dopamine fast and whether it could be harmful if people take it too far.
Now, if you read his original article, he's actually talking about only impulsive behaviors. Mm-hmm. So he's not talking about everything else. It's just that, you know, sometimes you might have the impulse to do maybe game a lot or I guess what we term emotional eating or binging. Mm-hmm. And so that impulse to do something, and not just any impulsive behaviors, but behaviors that actually are causing you some kind of distress or impairing you and leads to you not going to work or not being able to hand in your schoolwork, and something that potentially is quite addictive. Now, he did name some areas, and he did mention emotional eating or gaming, gambling. So he's not applying it to every single area of our life, which I think some people have ended up doing, and as you mentioned, you know, not making any eye contact. So I think they kind of took the idea and they've ran really far with it and go, okay, let's not do anything at all that gives us any pleasure. So he's actually saying, look, there's some things that we are doing that originally brought us pleasure, but over time, we're just doing them sort of mindlessly and impulsively. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying, like, okay, instead of just giving in to the impulse, actually pay attention to it, because it's just a conditioned response after a while. You know, instead, also you can think about what other activities you would like to do, things that actually bring you meaning and are in line with your values.
So why are people so swayed to these fads, right, so to speak? Like in this case, you were saying Dr. Cameron Sepa, his initial idea was completely different from what people eventually ran with it. So what is it about these that, you know, get so much attention from people and then they just take that to another level?
In some ways, I mean, we're very evolved, but we're quite simple. And so being in faddish trends are also social things to do, right? So everyone else is doing it, and so you kind of jump on the bandwagon, and there's a sense of you're being part of something. But I also think fads have a way of offering us or promising us something, a quick fix to a problem that we have. It does seem that they're saying, like, when I engage in this, I guess, deprive myself of everything, then the next day I can derive more pleasure. Mm-hmm. So it suggests to me that on some deeper level, they've sort of lost the reason or some sense of meaningless or pleasure to what they're doing every day, day in and day out, right? And so maybe this is a way of trying for them to remedy that, even though it's not really helpful or accurately done, rather than really reflecting on why I am in this state.
Mm-hmm. What would be a healthy way or healthy steps to for us that, that we can take to limit our dependency on these things in our life and actually live and actually find more meaning in what we do?
So before I continue on this, I just do want to mention that, you know, addiction in the clinical sense, and if you actually have an addiction, and it's not like a moral character issue, and it's not because you lack willpower. If we talk about, you know, dopamine, we can see that actually addiction really does affect the brain. Mm-hmm. And so giving something up becomes very difficult because it's just biologically also very difficult. And even if you have the willpower to do it, it's tough. So I wanted to mention that if any of the listeners are, you know, find yourself in a situation where you are addicted to something, then please do seek professional help. But in terms of like just handling normal everyday impulsive behaviors, or you're talking about, you know, constantly going on a smartphone and online, I suspect that we are doing it mindlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things to hold back perhaps is thinking, to notice what we're doing and to think about why we're doing it. And I think that's where a lot of the work comes in, because you actually have to consider, well, what will be more helpful to you? What's going to be more meaningful and satisfying in your long run rather than leaving you empty? So there's been a study that showed that people go home after a long day of work and they watch TV, but TV actually leaves them feeling more bored and empty in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with social media. We go on social media and we engage in a lot of maybe lurking or just reading posts, and that often people feel lonelier after that. I think it's really a good time for us to just consider what are we doing and why we're doing it. And maybe not that we have to give something up completely, especially if they're not inherently harmful, but maybe perhaps limiting them to certain times of the day and also thinking about what other activities we could pursue. For instance, if learning a new language. Now, that's tough, you know, and so when people come home from a long day of work, they may not want to do that, but it may actually be something that is more beneficial for someone who's interested in languages rather than just going on TV and watching the latest episode of The Crown.
So that was Dr. Chua Suk Ning, clinical psychologist. And like she said as well, Reseba has wrote in a blog post highlighting that dopamine fasting is not, he's not saying that it's an avoidance of dopamine or anything stimulating. And his guide does not advocate fasting from social contact. So nothing like what we heard from the other guy, James Sinkat, how he's saying that he's avoiding eye contact, he's avoiding meeting with people. So it's more recommending that people talk and bond with others while you're dopamine fasting in a way to abstain from maybe an hour a day of mindless scrolling on your social media or just on whatever internet platforms. But and you mentioned this earlier, right, Sumitra, when you look at what's being done or what's not being done in a so-called dopamine fast, it's like meditation. And a few articles have also raised that point. Is it just a rebranding of what many people have been doing for years and years just to make it catchy, right?
Yes. Decades ago, ammas and appas will say, switch off the television and go outside and play. Nothing has. But nowadays, it's put down that iPad. It's exactly the same thing.
It's time for your dopamine fast, darling.
It seems like it's very common for all these fads from Silicon Valley, especially to be like, oh, we'll rebrand this as something like dopamine fast or drink salt water, mm-hmm. or just to catch your attention, right? It's something that, okay, we'll make it catchy. It may not mean what it actually means, but as long as people start doing it and gets hooked onto it, that's what they want.
Oh, I think if they just listened to their parents when they were younger and, you know, reduced the amount of screen time, they wouldn't be in such a pickle these days.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Dopamine fasting and avoiding eye contact and all that nonsense. Imagine having meetings with somebody who doesn't want to meet your eye.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, to me, it's quite ridiculous. I'm sorry to say that. It's like you said, it's just, you just need to take a break. You just need to, you don't need to brand it as anything. It's just, it's a simple thing of taking a break.
Yeah. Do you do that?
I have two children, so I'm not allowed to take breaks. The moment I try to sit down quietly, I'm attacked.
Screen time is a break.
Yes. Mindlessly scrolling, that is my break.
And I think that's it, isn't it? For different people, it's different things. So this whole idea of a dopamine fast or whatever it actually is, it's you're sort of saying that, oh, this and this could work for everyone, but it may not work for everyone. For some of us, just that mindless scrolling would work. For some of us, it doesn't. So it really depends on you finding what works for you.
Yeah. But then you take the lesson back to children, for example, Julian. I mean, there's a reason why parents kind of limit screen time, or parents choose to limit screen time, right? Because there is now research and there is work now going very steadfastly towards the direction that screen time is addictive. Games are addictive. Definitely. Social media can be addictive. And, you know, as adults, we know hopefully that we can monitor ourselves and check ourselves, but children can't, which is why we put into place all of these guidelines for them, right? Yeah. So if you learned this lesson as a child, hopefully by the time you get to your cushy Silicon Valley job, you'll know that you're not meant to spend 16 hours a day on a screen.
It's so funny that you mentioned the children. Someone just told me this morning that she was on a flight and, you know, that short period where you're not allowed to use your gadgets, these little kids who had been entertained by their gadgets all that while, as soon as that sign came on, they were like, YouTube, you know, it was almost like, it was a terrible addiction. So there is a very valid point for that.
I just want to very quickly share, if we've got time, a tip that a friend of mine uses with his own kids, and they're very young kids who obviously like the iPad, but he's a chiropractor himself and he's got excellent posture and he doesn't want his children to be bent over. So in the house, the iPad is mounted on a wall. Okay. If you would, and you can use the iPad as much as you want, but you have to stand.
So it can never be taken off the wall?
No, it cannot be taken off the wall.
Never.
And the height can be adjusted as the child grows, but you can use the iPad as much as you want, but just stand.
That is very clever. I must do that. Well, you know, you can always keep the conversation going. Do tweet us at BFM Radio. You can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. But that's all the time we have for today's show. You can look us up on Facebook at BFM The Bigger Picture and drop us a message there as well. And if you miss any part of the show, you can always download the podcasts at bfm.my/dailydigest, or you can look us up at the BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Live and Learn, Sumitra here sticking around, and she'll be speaking to Shima Sengupta, who is the deputy representative of UNICEF in Afghanistan. And they're actually going to be discussing the psychosocial support programs that that Shima actually helped develop for children who are affected by violent conflicts. So that's coming up just after this. For now, it's Be Still by The Dead Weather. You've been listening to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.